This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. And 2 years ago, in response to the increasing number of residential units repurposed as business premises, the Selangor government offered 633 eligible house owners in Petaling Jaya the chance to convert their land status. Last month, The Star reported that only 14 took up the offer and paid the land conversion fee. Many thought the state government's offer was unfair. This issue was recently discussed at a symposium organised by the Petaling Jaya City Council, and Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Raja Frishakaran is here to give us the latest update. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, and I'm glad to be able to come on the show to maybe clarify some views or some misconceptions on this issue.
So I have a couple of kind of basic questions to start us off. What is the significance of being able to convert your land status, first of all?
Well, okay, so the law that governs land usage is basically the National Land Code. And basically, we have a few categories of land in Malaysia. So you've got agricultural land, that is normally like the lowest level of land. And then you've got residential, commercial, industrial, and institutional land. So residential lands are cheaper in general because, first of all, lower demand, but also they also come with lower taxes. Your cukai tanah on your land is cheaper, your cukai pintu on your land is cheaper, and it's meant to be used for residential purposes. So commercial lands attract a much higher tax on the land. And so the issue of converting your land arises when you change the usage. So these properties that once upon a time was residential, historically they were residential, today they are being used for commercial purposes. So under the National Land Code, it is not right to use a land except for its intended purposes. So by holding a residential land title, by right under the law, you're not supposed to do commercial activities on that piece of land. So in order to do commercial activities on that land, one should convert the land from a residential piece of land to a commercial status. So this conversion is happening now. There are many parts where land has been misused historically in Malaysia. Very commonly, we also see agricultural land being used for industry. So if you look at areas in Sungai Buloh and so on, a lot of the factories are actually built on agricultural land. So then they're not paying their fair amount of land taxes in those scenarios.
The other question I had was, so 633 eligible house owners in PJ were offered. What makes them eligible? What is the criteria
they passed?
What makes
them special?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we have nearly 200,000 houses in PJ. So why 633 houses?
And of that 200,000, I mean, I'm not saying anything, but I doubt that it's just 633 that have been, you know, used for commercial purposes.
All right, it's true. 633 does not refer to the number of houses that are conducting commercial activities. 633 refers to the houses along the few roads in PJ where MPPJ has changed the zoning. So we've talked about this before in another show. Certain main roads in PJ, once upon a time, were residential roads, but now have become very busy main roads. So roads like Jalan Gasing, Jalan University, the area around SS2, Jalan Kemajuan, Jalan Semangat, and many others. So these roads have been rezoned as limited commercial zones. That means they can run a certain amount of commercial activity. And the number of houses on these roads total up to 633 houses. So if you are along, if your property is along these roads, which have been zoned for limited commercial usage, you don't have to convert. You can still stay in that house as a house, as your residential property. But you have the opportunity, if you so desire, to convert your property into a commercial property. So you go to the land office, you apply to convert your land title from a residential title to a commercial title, and then that entitles you to run businesses out of it. Now, if you don't convert your land title first, if you run businesses without converting your land title, that would be an offence under the National Land Code. Now, what if you live on streets other than these few streets that have been zoned for limited commercial use? Then you would be breaking the law. So on those streets, you do not have the opportunity to do so. So it is only on those zones where MPPJ has already zoned as limited commercial zones that the property owners have the opportunity.
We're talking today about converting your land status, but also more specifically, how you can use your house to do business legally, you know, in such a way that you're not breaking the law, that you're not inconveniencing your neighbors. And if you've got any questions on land status, if you'd like to find out how this, you know, how this is happening, give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, if you are one of the 633 house owners, maybe you run a wedding planning business, maybe you run something else.
That is so popular.
That is extremely popular on those roads. The idea here would be that this is a great opportunity, but the complaint is that the government is overvaluing their lands and that the premium, therefore, is higher. The difference can be up to R1 million in some cases. Why is there that discrepancy?
Okay, so there is a standardized formula throughout the whole state of Selangor, and this formula, it's actually quite an old formula. Now, any residential property that converts into a commercial property has to pay a premium of 15% of the land value. So it's a very simple formula. It's 15% of the land value. And oftentimes, any property that converts from a residential to commercial property would enjoy an increase in land value far more than 15%, even double or even more than double. So the portion that is due to the state is only 15%, which is actually only a fraction of the profits reaped by the property owner when MPPJ or, you know, any other part of Selangor permits the conversion. So in the case of limited commercial, as we see in PJ, now we talk about the 633 properties, the state has given a further 50% discount over this 15% because these properties can only conduct a certain number of commercial activities. So you can't run restaurants out of it. You can't run a car mechanic shop out of it. You can only run a certain list of businesses like, you know, bridal studios, lawyer's office, and so on. And because of that, the state government has given them a 50% discount. So it's actually a 7.5% premium of the land value that is due. So how much does one have to pay? It really depends on how much your land is worth. Now, some houses along these areas are terrace houses, like in SS2, so they are small properties, the land value is cheaper, and so the premium is cheaper. Now, some of the bungalows on Jalan University and Jalan Gasset are huge. They're very big, and because they're very big, the land value is also very high. And because of that, you can get premiums running into the six figures. I have not seen any premium go as high as 1 million, but I would think something less than 500,000 or less than 300,000 maybe possible for the extra large bungalows.
Considering that this is a process that began in February 2014, so now 2.5 years ago, other than the price, what are the other reasons the take-up rate has been so low?
Actually, there needs to be a correction here because I think the article in The Star had given the impression that this began in 2014. However, the process of being able to convert one's land from residential to commercial has been there for decades. And the rezoning done by MPPJ has been in the early 2000s. And there have been a couple of rare properties that have actually taken advantage of this to do the land conversion even back then. So it did not begin in 2014. In fact, it has already started earlier than that. And it became more earnest in 2014 with the introduction of the 50% discount. So before that, it was that 15% because, you know, all commercial were treated the same. Any residential to commercial property, the premium is a blanket 15%. So the 7.5% came in February 2014.
Okay. And I have a question that is perhaps, you know, oh, well, I mean, I don't know if it's a fair question, but I'll ask
it
anyway.
It's okay, you can go ahead and ask it.
But aside from the fact that I'm not going to be breaking the law, what incentives are there for me to do this as a business owner? Because obviously, if I can avoid paying any additional costs, you know, I would go out of my way to avoid that.
I think it's avoid enforcement. The first reason is to do right by the law,
sure.
To avoid enforcement. The second thing is maybe certain businesses are a bit more sensitive to the need of business licenses because certain businesses for export purposes, they would be required to produce legitimate business licenses, or for certain bank financing, they may need to produce a legitimate business license. So then in order to get that business license, they need to be in a proper commercial property. So that would be the incentive for some people besides the incentive of enforcement.
The very obvious incentive.
The very obvious, yes. Incentive of enforcement.
Is PJ the first city to undergo this practice?
No. Actually, the whole act of converting, upgrading lands, it goes around the whole country, it goes around all of Selangor all the time. We see the most basic level when agricultural land is turned into township. So when agricultural land is turned into residential land, there's a premium to be paid. And from time to time, and it can happen all over Selangor, not just in PJ, when land is upgraded, to say from agriculture to industrial, from residential to commercial, it can happen, it has happened, and premium is due for all of this.
Considering that, as you mentioned earlier, the land premium might go up to 300,000, 500,000.
Could be for very big properties.
Land owners are then given 6 months to settle this. Is this not kind of a short window?
It is in a way a short window. It is a longer window than previously because historically the norm has been 3 months. Government has always envisioned that, you know, if you are in a position to upgrade your land, you're going to reap humongous financial benefit in your land value. When you convert it, you are able to pay this premium. So it's always been 3 months, and recently with some appeals from property owners, these 3 months have been extended to 6 months. Now, I personally have proposed to the current MB to consider installment schemes where, you know, we up to maybe 3 years or 5 years of monthly installments to assist these property owners. But a lot of these property owners can get their financing in order from the very beginning. You know, from the time you submit your application, from the time you consider applying, you can already start lining together your financing. You can get bank loans, or you can use your own savings or whatever it is that you plan to use. You don't have to wait until the time the build is served on you. The formula is straightforward. It's 15%. Of the land value. I think most property owners have a fairly decent idea what their land value is. So you can already prepare and have in mind that sum, that 15%. Or in the case of limited commercial in PJ, 7.5%.
I'm speaking today with Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Rishikaran. We're talking about the conversion of land status from residential to commercial. So for anybody who has noticed maybe their neighbours, you know, running some certain, you know, commercial elements out of their house, this might be a show that would interest you. If you've got any questions about perhaps how to go about this process or why it's so important, give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. And in the studio with me today, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Rishikaran. We're talking about land status, more specifically how you convert land status from residential to commercial or limited commercial. And I wanted to talk a little bit about land valuation, because you mentioned earlier that most people would have a kind of idea about the value of their land. But what factors are actually taken into consideration when you're determining that value?
I think that's a very good question. Now, earlier we talked about how the premium is 15% or 7.5% of the land value, but who determines what the land value is? I think that's a very interesting question, because it's a question that could affect people by thousands or tens of thousands of ringgit. And this is a problem that previously we have not faced, but in recent months, I would say this is a problem that we are facing in recent months, where the valuation that has been presented by the government is a bit on the high side. Now, a lot of people assume it's the land office that does the valuation, and that's actually not correct. While the land office is the one that processes applications to change your land status from residential to commercial, but there is a department, Jabatan Penilaian dan Pengurusan Harta, or JPPH for short, and this department is a federal government department under the Ministry of Finance. They are the ones who do valuations. They do all forms of government valuation. So whenever any government department needs a valuation done for any purpose, JPPH does the valuation for them. So these are professional valuers, and they value it. So, you know, historically, like 3 years ago, people who are extending their lease, so they need to pay a premium for their lease or extension, they t- typically got valuations that were slightly below open market rates. When I say open market rates, it's like maybe the prices you would see on iProperty or the prices of actual transactions that would be happening. But recently, we've been noticing that the valuations have been rather on the high side. So I've got some complaints, you know, recently, and it was also raised in the symposium that MPPJ held. Properties along Jalan Gasing were being valued at 4,500 ringgit per square meter by the valuation department. Now, if you look at iProperty, and if you look at comparable limited commercial bungalows, you find that they were actually there are no bungalows that are going for such high prices. And in fact, one of the particular property owners who came to me, he took the initiative to engage a private valuer, and the private valuer valued his property at 3,200 plus per square meter. So that's a 35% drop difference in valuation. So this is something that I actually have done a press conference, and I've actually called out to the valuation department under the Ministry of Finance to be transparent on how they do the valuation, how do they determine the prices, because in recent months we've seen cases where the valuation is extremely high. If they can justify the prices, then I guess the property owners can accept it. Maybe they can demonstrate how there are transactions happening at these prices. I think then the property owners can accept it. But as far as all evidence that we can see around this, the current controversy is the prices, the valuations are rather on the high side. I hope it's not that the valuation department has changed its methodology for the worse. But one thing that disappointed us in the symposium that we held, and also in previous meetings, we've always asked, please open up the files. You know, if you say that this particular property on Jalan University is worth this much, can you open your file and show us how you arrived at that figure? The valuation department's policy, it's secret. You know, the also famous OSA applies to even valuations, so they will not open it. So we've also had property owners who have written in appeals for revaluation or the recheck. Unfortunately, those have not gone very far. The replies have always been, well, we've checked, but this is the value. So I'm a bit disappointed. I'll be frank, I'm a bit disappointed with this valuation department, and I strongly urge them, if you are doing what you believe is right, and if you are saying that the values are really that high, and these are properties basically on Jalan Gasing and Jalan University that have been affected by this, I challenge them, please open your files, open your books, let the public, let the property owners see how you arrive at such figures. I think that transparency is not too much to ask for, as these people will be paying premiums based on that value.
And right now, I mean, when we talk about what happens within the government setting, that is the only valuation mechanism available?
That is right, because that's how government in Malaysia operates. That's the department that does the valuation. So on the flip side, this is the same department that does valuation for land acquisition. So then you'll have landowners who are constantly asking the valuation department to up the land values when their property is being acquired. I think
that might be part of the problem.
That might be part of the problem. Could be. But I think in the end of the day, in the interests of fairness to all Malaysians, you know, a lot of Malaysians are property owners. Over 60%, 60 plus percent of Malaysians own their own home. I think this is an issue that affects every one of us. Might affect us one day if our property comes under land acquisition, or if you want to extend our lease in the future. I think it is extremely important that the department entrusted to do property valuation does so fairly and does so transparently as well. You know, it's not enough to be fair, but to be seen to be fair. So, and I call upon them to be brave, to actually open up for scrutiny their valuation.
We're talking about land status, land conversion, land valuation today. If you've got any questions, if you'd like to share any stories, even any complaints, you know, you're free to call. That number is 03-771-09000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. I feel like I ask you this question every time you come in, but it's one that I think continues to be important. So when we talk about this rezoning, 19 areas were rezoned from residential to limited commercial areas. Let's talk definitions.
Sure.
What's limited commercial?
So limited commercial, there's a list of activities that are allowed. And the list would include offices, display unit, display showrooms. So bridal gowns can come under that. And many other kinds of showrooms, household products, furniture, antique furniture, so on, legal offices. Basically, the definition was put in place to minimize the impact that these businesses will produce to the neighbors. Now, a lot of these houses are still neighboring existing residential properties. So that is why there is a cap on the, its commercial activities, because certain commercial activities would negatively affect your neighbors. So if you run a restaurant, you have a commercial kitchen going on, the smell, the smoke, and whatnot would definitely affect your neighbors, and your neighbors may still be residential properties. So in the interest of providing that balance of saying that, okay, your street is not quite livable anymore, it's come the main road, so we want to give you the opportunity to change into a commercial activity, but we want to control what extent you do that, because you still have houses right next to you.
We also have mixed-use developments.
Yes, we do.
And a lot of modern developments, in fact, fall into that category. Are these blurring the lines of the commercial residential classification?
All right. So if you look at mixed developments, yes, they definitely blur the line. But I think they come in from a very different perspective. You see, now if we take, let's say, Jalan Penchala in PJ, that road which was previously residential, the houses at the back of these houses were also residential. And after 40 over years, suddenly government saying, okay, we allow you to do commercial, you're changing the rules midway. So we've got to take into account the original tenants, the original makeup of that neighborhood. But these mixed developments that we speak about, these Soho units, this Soho units that are towers above a shopping mall, they started off like that. I think everyone knew what they were getting in from day one. So the playing field is a bit different. So Soho units offer that hybrid where one can stay in the unit or one can use that unit solely for business or both. And I think that provides an interesting option for living for those who are up for it. And they can definitely subscribe to that. So I think government should be open to that. But government has also got to be very careful when you're changing the status quo. So when you're going into a very mature neighbourhood, let's say a mature neighbourhood of Section 12 PJ, and you want to change the setup, well, it's got to be done slowly and in consultation with the existing community. And that's why the limited commercial guidelines came about as such, because it's a compromise with the community. It's a compromise to say that, okay, we'll allow a certain amount of things, but we'll not allow too much so that it does not negatively affect the existing community over there.
Knowing what you're getting into right from the start is a very valid point, because it sounds like the rezoning has happened in some way as a response. You know, these
it
things
is a response.
Happened and then you just rezone. Does this not kind of reward lawbreakers in some way?
I don't think it's in that sense, because you see the logic behind the rezoning wasn't because, okay, everyone's running commercial activity, so okay, we'll rezone the area. While such a scenario may be possible, now, but if you look at what has happened in PJ with the 633 properties, it's more of a different kind of problem. It's a problem where roads have gotten really busy, roads have been widened. So you look at Jalan Templar, Jalan Semangat, Jalan University, they've gotten to be really, really busy main roads. And at the request of property owners, so the council has responded to amend the zoning. So townships evolve. I think that's a good thing. I think townships should evolve, but townships should not evolve at the whims or fancies of one or two people. So what should happen and what has happened is they go through a process of changing the PJ local plan or the PJ master plan, as we can imagine it. And that process has discussions with the community. It also goes through a public hearing process, so people who are not happy have the opportunity to voice out and say so. And the final outcome is often a compromise of the various different views that we have.
It isn't just rezoning. that we need to talk about, because some businesses operating from residential units also have temporary business licenses. Mm-hmm. What does that permit you to do?
I think that that scenario does not happen much these days, although historically that that has happened. So council has certain councils have given temporary business licenses. It's not unheard of, but that would not be quite in fitting with laws passed in Parliament. So the two laws, namely your National Land Code that says that land can only be used for its purposes, and the second law would be the Town and Country Planning Act, where using a property or a piece of land other than what it's zoned for is wrong. And I think these laws are in place for a very good logical reason, because we don't want a cowboy town. We want a town that is predictable. You want to know that a funeral parlor will not suddenly open up next door to you. You know, you want to make sure that a restaurant suddenly does not open next door to your house, disturbing your peace and quiet and for you to enjoy your home. You want to know that your businesses will not be affected by a big noisy factory that may come up in your commercial area. So there is good logical reason why we have these laws. There is good reason why government cannot amend zoning at its whims and fancies. It needs to go through a public consultation process. And that should be adhered to. So this whole idea of temporary licenses are not too common, actually. In fact, I think today you don't see them out there.
There are common sense ideas of what you would need to keep in mind, I think, when you're running a business out of a house. You know, there are certain things, of course, just for yourself or for your neighbours that you shouldn't do. But that's relying on common sense, and common sense,
and that's a very dangerous thing, because
exactly.
You know, a lot of Malaysians have different interpretations of what common sense is.
Precisely. So from the government point of view, or from a policy point of view, what are the guidelines for running a business out of a residential unit?
At the moment, I would say there are no guidelines, because, you know, if
so
you're
we
not
really
talking,
are relying on common sense.
If you're talking about a place that is actually zoned for residential use, you're not supposed to run a business out of it. In fact, I have brought this up in the State Assembly, because we have commercialization creeping into residential units. And in fact, some of it are things that we could talk about allowing. So one of the most common ones now will be Airbnb. Would renting out your rooms in your house or renting out your whole house will be allowed, or would that be considered a full-on commercial activity that would not be allowed? I think a number of home-based businesses are perfectly fine. They don't disturb your neighbors. You know, if you're doing certain internet businesses and all that. So I think those are areas where the law can evolve to accommodate. You see, because a lot of these laws were from the 70s and before. So, you know, if you go back to the age of the 70s and 80s, there were not many businesses that people would do at home. Internet businesses did not exist back then. A freelance-based society probably made up a very tiny fraction of the economy as compared to today. So with the nature of economy changing, the nature of how people work change, I think we should discuss opening up avenues where people can run businesses from homes. But at the moment, there is no black and white permitting such things.
So assuming that you know, house owners or property owners continue to think, oh, this valuation is unfair, or I just can't be bothered to do this, what is going to happen if house owners continue to hold out? If the other... I'm not quick enough to do the math on 633 minus 14 in this case, but what's going to happen?
Okay, I think from the 633 properties, it is not all that would be converting. Many of them are empty lots, as with the trend in PJ. There are a lot of empty houses in PJ. I'm not sure why. There could be some disputes among children when parents have passed away. So some are empty lots. We've got some properties which are still residential properties in the
zones.
And
will not need to rezone.
Have no
sense.
Desire to rezone, at least in the foreseeable future. So I do not imagine that all 633 will take up this offer. It does not look likely. there already is some amount of law enforcement going on, summonses that are being issued. Summonses can be issued under two possible laws at the moment, three possible laws actually. The first law, which is the smallest level of summonses, is for conducting a business without a license. So that can attract a fine up to 1,000 ringgit, from 250 ringgit to 1,000 ringgit. And then you've got laws against the Town and Country Planning Act for using a property against its zoning or against its planning permission. So that can attract a fine, a much higher fine, up to 12,500 ringgit. So the fines that are being given out now are the smaller level fines. But under the National Land Code, bigger punishments can be handed out by the land office for those who violate. I don't think it's the intention to punish people, to make life extra difficult for people. But it is also important that we have some sense of conformity with the law, because if you start allowing certain areas of law to be broken here and there, it's going to lead us down a slippery slope.
So in terms of enforcement then, how frequently are these premises inspected?
So I hear stories from any time between once a month to once a quarter, or maybe as once in 4 or 5 months.
And for people who are maybe living in the area or just observers, keen observers, and would like to maybe direct some complaints or just voice out concerns, where should they go?
They can always reach the councils. Most of the councils in Selangor have a hotline, a 24-hour hotline these days, so you can always easily contact your council. In fact, in PJ, MBPJ started putting up its Aduan hotline number on billboards. So if you take a closer look at some of the billboards, you would actually see that they've started to advertise these numbers that people can get in touch with. I think there's also another area for listeners out there. Now, if you're running a business and if you're looking for property to rent, I think it is extremely important that you take a little step before signing any tenancy agreement to ask the landowner, can I see your land title? Can I know if you've done the conversion? Can I know if your property is actually suitable for commercial use,
that I'm not going to get raided,
yes,
or summoned,
correct,
for
because
no reason?
The businesses would get in trouble for not being able to obtain a license. The businesses will not be able to obtain a license if they're operating in areas outside of the limited commercial zones. The businesses would also be have difficulty getting the license if the landowner refuses to convert his land. So for business operators out there, it really would save a lot of hassle down the road if you would just go a little step further when looking at property to rent by asking your agent, asking your future landlord, could I just see your land title? Could I see a copy of a land title? I just want to see there, what does it say there? Bangunan perniagaan, bangunan kediaman, is it a residential property? Is it a commercial property? If it's a residential property, it's best to stay clear. There are many options out there. Many options for commercial properties out there. If it's commercial property, then you are safe, in safer footing, you're good to go. You just want to check one more thing. You want to check that your business activity complies with the list of limited commercial activities. You can easily check that at MPPJ. You can check that at your PJ local plan. If you're in PJ, or if you're in Kajang, you're in Subang Jaya and Klang, you can check with your respective local plans on any restriction of activities. But if your landlord produces a residential land title, I would strongly suggest you move on to a different property.
And that concludes the bit of our show where we're looking at land status conversion. We are going to keep Rajiv around for a little while longer just to kind of run through some issues. We're talking about things after this, including what the local council might be doing to preempt Zika, as well as what's happening over at Astaka. If you have got any questions, or if you'd just like to surface something, if you live around the area and you might want to just talk about something that's on your mind, give us a call. Our phone lines remain open. That number is 0377109000. You can text 0162019000. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We will be back after the market update. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. And in the studio with me today, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Rishikaran. Earlier, we were talking about residential units and limited commercial use. And now we're moving on to just a number of stories that we think might be of interest to people. At any point, feel free to call if you've got any stories, questions, complaints for Rajiv. That number, 03-771-09000. You can also text 01620019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So just to talk about land a little bit more and residential property specifically, the Ampang Jaya Municipal Council is undergoing a year-long exercise to help house owners obtain permits for their illegal extensions. Should, I mean, in the same vein as what we were talking about earlier, shouldn't the process be the other way around? Shouldn't they have tried before?
It should. No, it should. And I think we don't want to be condoning wrongdoing, but at the same time, there is a reality that we have to deal with, that a lot of property around us in Malaysia, no, it's not just Ampang, it's PJ, it's KL, it's Kuantan, Johor Bahru. I think the whole country suffers from this syndrome. We have a lot of people doing renovations on their homes without applying for necessary approvals. I think part of the problem is many people don't understand that they need to do so, or even if they know they need to do so, they don't understand why they need to do so. That, come on, government, just leave me alone. Let me do what I want with my house. You know, if I want to extend all the way to the back, if I want to add one more floor above. But government does control these things, and it's not just in Malaysia. In fact, nearly every country in the world has such regulations. So what you see in Ampang, it's an effort to get people to legalize their extensions. And extensions would fall under two categories, you know, extensions that comply with the uniform building bylaws. And if your extension complies, it's a matter of going through the necessary paperwork to get them approved. And if your renovation does not fall within the uniform building bylaws, I think that's when the difficulty arises. So in Ampang, they're giving people chance as long as you don't exceed your boundary line. So I think that can be said as a fair olive branch. But what councils in Malaysia, and I speak beyond PJ because I think it's the same problem that plagues virtually every council in Malaysia. Enforcement and education has got to step up. The awareness to people that, you know, if you're doing renovation in your house, you've got to get approval. And it's also the awareness to people that do not take your contractor's word that he's gotten the approval for you. Because a lot of people have been misled by their contractors. Their contractors may apply for one thing and do the other. Your contractors may say they've applied for it, but they have not applied for it. Throughout my 8 years in government, before becoming an ADUN as councillor and then now as a state assemblyman, I've had a number of people come to me when MPPJ takes action on them and then they're surprised. They thought the contractor has got everything cleared up with the authorities. So I think there are many good contractors out there, but there are also many contractors that do plenty of shortcuts. So as a property owner, you're going to be spending 50, 100, 200,000 ringgit on your renovations. Do ask the contractors, you know, can I see all the approvals? I want to keep a copy of all the approvals by my local authority for my records, because you're doing the job today, I pay you and then you're gone, but I'm living in this property, I'm going to hold this property for years to come. So I think that's something that property owners should have. So, you know, if you're living in Ampang, do take advantage of this amnesty because, you know, otherwise the penalties for doing renovations without approval is quite hefty.
PK on Twitter says, how come a house at the main round of Section 17 is running a car wash? It's really filthy. I definitely believe it's a breeding ground for mosquitoes and rats.
I strongly believe that he's referring to 17/40, PJ. I absolutely agree. It's filthy. It's disgusting. And I've already complained to MPPJ about it. And I've pushed enforcement officers in MPPJ to do something about it. MPPJ has come and raided that place more than 10 times in recent months. And sadly, you know, because car wash does not need much equipment. You raid, you take all their equipment, they just go get new ones and start up shop again.
The nearest hardware shop and that's it.
Yes, they go to the nearest hardware shop, they stock up on the water jets, soap and whatnot, and they start again business tomorrow. So our enforcement action is continuous and will continue to go on. And this is this is going to keep happening. Enforcement is going to keep happening until one day we drive them out of their place. I think it's terribly irresponsible of the house owner to rent his house out to these guys running the car wash. He should have some consideration for his neighbors. I mean, I really pity the houses left and right and just front and back of that car wash.
Just very briefly, while we're talking about MBBJ, Public Relations Officer Zainun Zakaria said recently, under the law, consumers have a right to sue the council if the nearest parking ticket machine is not working. Okay, I'm just going to open that up to you.
Speechless. I'm speechless. I read that. It baffled me, to be honest. But I think technically, maybe she was just answering technically that yes, you do have a right.
Technically,
you have a right. No one can take that right away from you to sue. But I don't see any sense in suing the council. Now, if you stumble upon a parking meter that doesn't work, I think it's frustrating because then there's that worry, what happens? Would I need to walk another 100 meters to find another machine? Would enforcement come and summon me, even though the machine is spoiled? As a general rule, enforcement will not summon in areas where the machine is spoiled. However, just to be on the safe side, in case a particular officer may not be aware that the machine is faulty, you could take a picture with your phone or maybe a short video clip with your phone to demonstrate that, hey, the machine is not working.
On this date, at this time.
On this date, yeah, because you normally have timestamps on your camera in your phone. So you just keep that just in case you get a summon, but you probably wouldn't get one.
Staying in PJ, Astaka, which is of course, popular recreational field in Petaling Jaya, has become a spot where it seems construction debris is being dumped, open burning is taking place, illegal. And, you know, residents claim that so far nothing seems to be happening. And it used to be kind of a popular neighborhood spot. People want to be able to walk there to use the facilities like the bathroom, the washrooms and, you know, things of that nature and do not feel that it's up to par. You know, what's going on there?
I think, yeah, the story in the Star yesterday would have blown this wide open. I would have to apologize to the people of PJ. This is one of the shortcomings of MPPJ in upkeeping Astaka in recent years. Maybe we go through some of the issues there. Yes, it's true. Things like the toilet, the cleanliness is not up to mark. Things like the field, the jogging track, and so on, they're not up to mark. We do have maintenance contractors. They have not been performing. The officers that are overseeing these contractors need to step up to reprimand contractors that fail to perform. We have a new officer that is now overseeing Astaka that has come in last month. In fact, long before the story has come up, I've done many site visits in Astaka this year to push MPPJ to step up its efforts. At the most recent site visit about 2-3 weeks ago with this new officer, I think it's positive that he's taking things seriously. Maybe, you know, fresh hands on the job helps. And that's for cleanliness within Astaka. Now, the construction debris and open burning that is being talked about is technically not within Astaka. It's outside Astaka on the roadside. But that's still a problem that MPPJ has got to deal with. We have started putting CCTVs, mobile CCTVs around. We started in Section 17 to catch people who do this. Now, you cannot simply throw rubbish as and where you like. Now, I know the roads leading in and out of Astaka are quiet at night and maybe provide opportunity for certain irresponsible people to do it. But just beware, if there's a CCTV or an undercover officer waiting, you can get caught and the penalty is quite hefty. So in Section 17, people have been caught on CCTV. So summonses are being issued to those who are caught on CCTV for throwing rubbish at street corners, at by the side of padangs and whatnot. So beware.
We also have a pretty interesting question via Twitter from Rio Ayanami. A house on a residential road is being used by a restaurant behind it for storage and cleaning, and it's attracting birds and rats. Is this legal?
No, it's not. No, because the house is meant to be used for residential purposes. So it's not meant to be used for business purposes, including ancillary business services such as storage. So you could report it to your local council.
And to close off, of course, I mean, it's been hitting the headlines this week. It's unavoidable. Zika. Everyone's worried about it. We're up to two cases. What is the state government doing at the moment to preempt it?
The state government has definitely stepped up things in recent days since the first case was reported in Klang. So I see pictures of our exco for health every day doing spot checks here and there in Selangor, making sure that enforcement officers are going around ensuring houses and private properties and public properties are free of breeding areas. Now, Zika is transmitted by the same mosquito as dengue, the Aedes mosquito, and they breed in the same conditions. In clear water that is probably in shaded area, not exposed directly to sunlight, not in dirty water. A lot of breedings happen in private property. I think this is where the fingers point both ways. Now, no doubt there are breeding grounds in public areas, and the respective local authorities have got to step up efforts to clear these potential breeding grounds. But a lot of breeding grounds also happen in private property. When they do these house-to-house inspections, very often you find breeding grounds in many, many houses. Even for one of the inspections that I followed in PJ, you even find breeding grounds in kindergartens. So this needs to be eliminated. Now let's look at Singapore. Singapore is the beacon of perfect government, as perfect as government could probably get in this world. And you probably will not find incidences of clogged drains or other faults on public areas where stagnant water would be the cause of breeding. But yet, you have so many cases of Zika virus, and you have so many people infected with dengue in Singapore. It's the same problem as Malaysia. You know, your house has many breeding traps. So, you know, check your house. 10 minutes a week is all we ask for to see if there's any breeding grounds. Eliminate the breeding grounds to protect your family and to protect your neighbours.
We have a couple of other questions, but we're unfortunately not going to be able to get to them because we have actually run out of time. So thank you very much for coming in.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking today with Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Rishikaran, and we've been discussing not just land status, but kind of bits and bobs from around the state of Selangor. And you've been listening today to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.